Welcome. I'm Lisa Bennett, and this is the Conference for Women telecast. Next month will mark the one-year anniversary of Me Too, a remarkable, far-reaching movement sparked with a single tweet, "If you've been sexually harassed or assaulted, write Me Too." With us today to explore some of the new workplace dynamics and questions raised by this movement is one of the most sought-after experts on the topic, Grace Spates, head of the labor and employment practice for Morgan Lewis. Morgan Lewis is rated a best of the best law firm and is also led by a woman. Grace, before we dive into our topic and questions we've received from listeners, I'd like to ask you to share a little bit about your early background and why you do the work you do.
Sure. I don't know how early you want me to start, but I always like just to tell a little bit of my story because I think it's a little unique. I was raised by a single mom in a very poor neighborhood in South Philadelphia, and she went to a factory to work every day, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week, and I got to understand the issues of workers who were unionized and were paid by the hour and those types of things. And so, you know, I always had an interest in law. When I joined the law firm, I did a general litigation practice, but that practice involved sort of companies against companies. And I'm more into dealing with individuals. And so the labor and employment practice allows me to work with companies to hopefully set up workplaces that their employees feel safe, treated fairly, and feel like they have an opportunity. So it's really a human practice, even though I work with companies, but the focus is on helping them help their employees.
That's interesting. You're also one of the leading experts employers call on to address sexual harassment allegations in the workplace. What are you seeing now that's different since the rise of Me Too?
Very different in the sense that I think at least most of the clients who I work for understand that the training that they did in the past about sexual harassment, the policies that they had in place against sexual harassment, gender discrimination, retaliation, all of those things, really hasn't worked. And so there's sort of a broader desire, at least with the companies who I work with, to try to, what I call, peel back the onion to see, you know, what's our culture like? Do we have a problem that people don't feel safe or included or respected in the workplace? And if so, why is that and how do we change it? And it's interesting because at least in my, I guess I've been practicing now 36 years of practice, up until, you know, the last however many months we've been, you know, dealing with Me Too issues and the movement, that wasn't the focus. It was more or less, let's do our training, let's have policies, and let's move forward and everything will be perfect. I think most companies, at least the ones that I work with, understand it takes a lot more.
It's good to hear. I saw a recent report by leanin.org and SurveyMonkey that said half of those surveyed said their companies have constructively responded to this movement in some way, taking action against harassers, updating their policies, offering different kind of guidance and training. I'm curious what you think about those numbers, one in two companies responding.
I'm surprised by that. I would think it would be more. I'm surprised. I will say that with at least the client base that we work with, it's more than one in two. Definitely a lot more. And a lot of them are doing a lot of the same things. I talked about having a concern about culture. There's more focus on the issue of sexual harassment, and even broader than sexual harassment, because I think the Me Too movement really has put a focus on not just sexual harassment, but making sure that people feel safe in the workplace, regardless of gender. Yes, the gender issue has driven it, but I'm seeing a broader focus on this. So there's more communication from the C-suite, you know, from the CEO about the need to have respectful workplaces, the statements or desire to not tolerate workplaces with sexual harassment or disrespect. There's more discussion going on in companies. You know, coming along in the earlier years, people didn't really talk about sexual harassment. It was sort of something that was underground, and yeah, there were claims, but they were investigated and tried to be dealt with sort of in a hush-hush way. Let's, you know, investigate it. Let's get it resolved. Let's move people around, move the person who's been harassed away from the harasser and those types of things. But now there's more of a discussion. I've been invited out to a lot of companies to have discussions with like their top 250 leaders in the company to talk about Me Too, to talk about things that leaders can be doing to make sure the environments are safe. And then the other thing that's a little different is the focus on bystanders. In the past, the burden has always been on the victim. So the woman or men, there are some men who have been sexually harassed, but more so women, for the women to be the people who come forward and complain. And a lot of times that doesn't happen, but now there's more focus on bystanders, people who may, in the company, who may see things, who may hear things, who, you know, may have been in, at an event where something happened that was untoward, you know, a woman. And companies are putting an obligation on those people, even if they weren't the victim, but they somehow saw it, to come or heard about to come forward. And I think that can be very helpful so that we aren't just relying on the woman who has been harassed to take the big step of making a complaint. Because that is a big step.
It's huge. And it sounds like a critical piece to changing the actual culture, right?
Yes, exactly. We're all in this, okay? Right. We all have to make sure our environment, our workplace,
right. Which leads to another thing that I wanted to ask you about, which was that there seems to be a growing interest in workplace cultural assessments. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what those are and why they matter?
Yeah, we do a lot of them, and I've done a lot of them. And this is something new. I mean, I will tell you, you know, as a lawyer, years ago, if a company had said, I think I want to do a workplace culture assessment, I think most employment lawyers who work with companies would say, oh, no, you don't. Okay. Why do you want to uncover potential problems? And if you uncover potential problems, what are you going to do about them? All right. Mm-hmm. So we probably would have recommended against it. That has completely changed now. And it goes back to what I mentioned about companies really being concerned about culture, because most of them are saying, look, we did everything we were supposed to do from a legal standpoint, right? We put in ways for you to complain. We had policies. We conducted investigations. And lo and behold, look, we still have all of this sexual harassment going on, people coming forward. So there must be something about our culture. So, I mean, to make sort of a long story short, because culture assessments take a lot of work, essentially what you're doing is we go in, and there are other companies who do it and other law firms as well, but we go in, we sit down and talk with the leaders of the company, and a lot of times we're dealing with the C-suite, CEO. You know, what are you concerned about? What do you want us to focus on? And we sort of create a bullseye. So in the Me Too world, a lot of the focus is on, do our complaint processes work? And if not, why? And so that's maybe one aspect of what we're looking at. And then what we do is we talk, a lot of times you'll divide the company up into business units because, believe it or not, huge companies don't have one culture, right? They may have different divisions, different business units, and there may be cultures within cultures, right? So we work with the company on the best way to do that. And we talk to leaders in the company or in the units. And then we do focus groups in which we actually talk to employees in the company, and we'll have certain ways that we group them. We tend to put, you know, all women in one group, all guys in another group. And there are many groups that will go on because this takes weeks to do this. We may group them by tenure at the company because your views about the company and what you've experienced may differ depending on how long you've been there. And we'll have different ways of grouping, and we go in and we ask them about things that are pertinent to, for example, how they feel women are treated at the company. If they were sexually harassed, would they make a complaint? A lot of times, most of the time, they say, no, I would not make a complaint. Mm-hmm. And then we say, why? And then at the end of the day, we report back to the company sort of themes that we've heard. We don't make, you know, attribute any comments to any individual, because one of the beauties about this is when folks walk into a focus group, they're supposed to be able to tell us and say whatever is on their mind, okay? And we're not going to go back and attribute something that they've said to them. We give the themes to the company, and then we say, based on these themes that we're hearing, these are some of the things we think you need to look at changing. And it's too early, I would say, to determine whether it's working in those companies that have done the culture assessments, because, I mean, at least from my standpoint, the companies I'm dealing with, this is the first time they've done it. And we've just been doing it over the last, well, it's almost a year now, I guess, when the whole Me Too, you know, movement started. So we'll have to go back and see whether it's been helpful and whether there has been changes.
It does sound like a tremendous commitment to go through that entire process.
Yeah, it would have to be, because you can't go through it if you're not willing to listen to what comes out of it and then to try to make some change.
Right.
Otherwise, you lose the confidence of your employees and the people who participated in it.
Yeah, makes sense. So I'm curious, given that we are at this almost 1 year point, you know, some people would look at that and say, well, you know, the momentum around this movement is going to fade, as it fades around a lot of things. Trends come and go all the time. Do you think that that's, where do you think things are headed with this? Is momentum fading, or do you expect it to continue, or what do you see ahead?
I don't think this is going to fade. And I do know that, you know, when Anita Hill testified in the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings, there was a big uproar about sexual harassment then, and there was focus on it then, but not for long, right? As I always say to people, he got the job, and we sort of moved on, except there was a focus on doing some training and things of that nature. This movement is so different. Number one, it has just, you know, it's definitely a big movement in the U.S., but it's going global. I have clients in Asia, in Europe, who, you know, are starting to deal with this issue. And I think, given where we are, given sort of the generation of employees now, I just don't think employees are going to be willing to tolerate disrespect and unsafe workplaces. And the interesting thing is, when this first started, a lot of the claims, as you probably remember, were old claims, right?
Right.
They were claims that some went as far back as 20 years ago, some 5, 10 years ago. Well, most of the old claims now, people who had old claims have come forward, and companies have dealt with them or are in the process of dealing. But I will tell you, despite the great efforts of companies, there's still claims of sexual harassment.
Mm.
And there's still valid claims of sexual harassment. And so now, and people in a lot of companies now feel empowered to report, and companies are, not all, but many are responding quickly. So I think this is going to continue. This awareness and this movement, like I said, I've been doing this 36 years. I've not seen anything like this in the employer context.
That's really great to hear. And it's interesting that you mentioned the Anita Hill and that context. I was struck by John Oliver's segment on Me Too this summer when he interviewed Anita Hill. And he made the comment that it seems like we often think about sexual harassment just long enough to feel like we've addressed it, but not quite long enough to actually address it.
Yeah.
And you're saying something very different is happening.
Yeah,
there.
Because I think the focus now is, I think everybody recognizes the training and what we call training, where, you know, you basically trained for compliance. You know, are we complying with the law?
Right.
Did not work. And given that the focus is now on culture, I do think that focusing on culture and changing culture within organizations will be long lasting. And I just don't see that dropping off. And
yeah.
I think younger people, I mean, I got a 32-year-old and a 30-year-old, okay? And they want to work at places that are good places to work, right? That are, they view them as safe. They view them as being inclusive, diverse and inclusive, respectful, and a place where they can have opportunity to advance.
Right.
And I think with this generation, if companies don't get on board with those concepts, they're not going to get the best talent, and they're going to realize that.
Something I want to ask you about is, you know, we put out the question to our listeners, you know, what we let them know that we had this opportunity to talk with you and wanted to know some of their questions. And there is, of course, some curiosity about the backlash to Me Too. And also concerns that many people continue to have about reporting sexual harassment. One person wrote in and said, you know, my question is, will being known as a whistleblower hurt me more than help me now? What would you say?
I would say, let me start by saying it should not, right? It should not hurt you. You have a right to complain, and you should complain when you either are the victim of, or you see someone else who is the victim of inappropriate conduct. And employers have anti-retaliation policies, I should say, in place, but we know that you can't control every person and every manager in the workplace, and you can have people who will go run afoul of those policies and law. Having said that, you know, to the extent that someone feels that they cannot complain and they worry about being complaining, I always say to people, even if you're not comfortable going to HR or going to your boss, or assuming your boss isn't the one who's the person
right.
who's harassing you, you know, find someone that you trust in the organization. It may be a coworker, and because of this sort of now view of an obligation or responsibility of bystanders to go forward, I would encourage people to do that. Is there a risk? There's always a risk because of rogue actors in a company. All right. I wouldn't be telling the truth if I sat here and says, no,
yeah,
go forward. There's never a risk. There is a risk, but I think that there is value in having, if you have that concern, having someone else with you, having someone else help you to report, And to the extent that you feel like after you reported you were retaliated against or something, you know, it was you think like it's the end of my career, you need to report that too. Mm-hmm. That's the best advice that I can give. It doesn't, and I always say to people, you know, that if you don't report, you know, you may also be putting, and I know this is a heavy burden, but somebody else in danger, because usually if the person who is harassing is a predator, you're not the only one who has been harassed, right?
Of course, yeah.
You are not the only one. So yes, think about your own situation, but also think about the good of the organization and others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great, great advice. So you know, broadening this question about the backlash, we know that some people are very concerned that the backlash could set women back in the workplace more generally. Do you see risk of that?
I do, but there shouldn't be. Uh-huh. I do. You know, and it's funny that you say this because I've heard this from a number of leaders. I don't want to travel with a woman colleague because I'm afraid I might get accused of sexual harassment.
Exactly.
Right? Or, you know, in a law firm partner saying, well, I don't want to take a woman associate with me to trial in another city because, you know, we have to stay at a hotel and I'm worried I'm going to be accused of sexual harassment. And frankly, and this is, you know, probably the wrong word to use, I say that's baloney. All right. and I tell leaders that the whole Me Too movement, you can't use it as an excuse to backtrack on professionally developing and advancing and training women. It's just nonsense. All right. And I always say when I talk to leaders, it's pretty simple. In my view, all right, use your brains. And when you're interacting with colleagues at work, especially women, I mean, think about how you interact, what you say, and how you interact with your mom, your daughter, your sister. And if you use those principles, I think it's pretty simple.
It does sound very simple.
Very simple, okay? I'm not going to go in and ask a coworker, let's go out on a date. I'm not going to go in and rub a coworker's legs or behind. I wouldn't do that to my mom. I wouldn't do it to my sister. I wouldn't do it to my daughter. I don't think it's hard. I really don't. So yes, I've heard that a lot. Yes, I do worry about it, but this is not the time for men leaders to backtrack from interacting with and professionally developing women. It's just not the time.
Yeah. So Grace, this leads to a broader question about women in the workplace. Do you see tackling sexual harassment as actually going hand in hand with other issues such as growing the number of women in leadership positions and so on?
Absolutely. No question about it. Because again, remember sort of my theme about the whole Me Too movement and what I'm trying to get employers to focus on in my counseling. Having a safe, inclusive, and respectful workplace, right? And if I am focused on those three things, that means that in addition to sexual harassment, which is the safety part, I'm going to want to make sure that women are being included in the promotions in the company, included in leadership development, included in spots at the top of the company. So I've got to focus on that. And I also have to make sure that they're being paid appropriately. That goes into the whole issue of safe, inclusive, and respectful, mm-hmm. right? So it's a much broader issue than just sexual harassment. And it has to feed into all of those other things that impact women. I am hoping that one of the outcomes of the whole Me Too movement is that we see more women being moved into leadership. Because if we had more women in leadership positions, I don't think we would have all of this sexual harassment. I don't. I really don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, seen that. You've seen that firsthand.
Yes.
Morgan Lewis.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly right. You know, you put women in leadership positions and things change.
Yeah.
And they can start to change overnight.
Well, Grace, thank you. There are so many more things I'd love to ask, but I know you're incredibly busy, and you know what you've laid out is so perfectly clear. It's encouraging. And you know, that thread of we're after a safe, inclusive, respectful workplace, and that takes addressing the culture, not just the policies.
Is
really, really a great thing to focus on. Grace, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and insights today. And listeners, thank you for joining us. As a reminder, a recording of this conversation will be posted online in just a few days. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email announcing when it's available for streaming. In the meantime, we look forward to you joining us again for next month's Conference for Women telecast.